So it's December 27th, and we're on the cusp of the new year. 3 days from now, our beloved teacher, Omprapasana, will return from a year away. It's actually been a year and a month. And we are also lucky to have Ajahn Kirundamo, another beloved teacher of ours, returning for the winter retreat. And then there's New Year's, and then a few days later, we'll begin our winter retreat. And already, I think today we had three of our retreat crew members arrive, and I was just telling the retreat, during this time of retreat, we are very lucky to have a group of individuals, laity, who would like to support us during the retreat, and they follow the 8 precepts and practice with us, and also practice a lot of dana. It's an encouragement from them, for the monks, to put down some of our responsibilities and be able to devote more time to formal practice. So there's often a feeling of gratitude that comes up for that, joy. And for me, I was just mentioning to Tan Rikito, like, relief. Okay, wow, 9 out of 11 are here already. And it's got a very wonderful feeling. And so it's an interesting time in the monastery because there's a lot of transition right now. Ajahn Yaniko, our abbot, has left for most of the 3 months of the retreat. He'll return briefly for Magga Puja, and hopefully he'll return as a preceptor, monk who in the Thai system can ordain monks. Omprapasana has been doing that for almost 30 years of Abhayagiri's history. So that's another lovely thing that's happening now with Ajahn Yaniko. And of course, yeah, welcoming back teachers who, for most of us, have hold a very important role in our lives and in our hearts. So for me, it's a lot of time of gratitude and happiness. And there is just a very good feeling right now. And we have several newer members of our community, 4 Anagarkas and 2 Samaneras. So I think for the Samaneras, this will be their second retreat. And oftentimes when we think about our retreat, I mean, sometimes there's a feeling of dread, but oftentimes there's this interest and excitement and kind of looking forward to it. And I find it's a very good time, especially before one goes on retreat, and especially one like this where it's 3 months long, to really examine one's motives and to look at, you know, what the qualities of mind are entering into this space. And this is a sacred space. This is a space where we are devoting ourselves to our spiritual practice. And we're all agreeing to that. We've signed up for it. We're interested. We're motivated. But the motivation is something to kind of check to see what's going on. So right now, for example, and again, I don't think this is just for retreat time, but any time that we're thinking about our spiritual practice, this is a helpful reflection to think about what it is we're doing, why we're doing it. So when we're kind of right now, where we've kind of put aside a lot of the schedule and we have an open time, so there's just mostly tonight and then New Year's Eve, our usual kind of welcoming of the new year, an all-night sit, and hoping Lumpur will give the talk. We'll see how he's doing. Jet lag, or maybe Ajahn Kirundamo. But this is a great time to kind of think about, like, well, for the monastics, I'd like, you know, to ask, like, well, what's it been like the last few days? We've had no schedule, nothing going on, really. Just sometimes passing on duties, no morning or evening puja, no organized work period. What's that been like? You know, has that been something helpful, or are you noticing anything? Are you questioning anything about what's happening during this time? Because, you know, a lot of the retreat will have plenty of time like this, and we will need to guide ourselves. And even, you know, and for the retreat crew, it's the same. There will be these times of that there'll be an open schedule, there are times that we'll have group practice, pujas, and some structure, and then again not. And this isn't, as much as we might look forward to retreat time and kind of we might think like, oh, great, you know, I'll have some time on my own. And it's not really, it's not usually that easy to engage in a retreat like this, even with structure or without. It's a very difficult practice. And I remember over the years, I actually just thought like, oh, how many retreats has this been? Okay, it's been 23-month retreats for me. So that's 5 years. And when I thought about that, I thought, oh, it doesn't feel like 5 years on retreat for 5 years. But over time, you know, it's something that we want to build skill and understanding with how we're engaging with it. And one of the things that might be occurring now is that there might be some excitement about knowing what it is. I put some of the schedule up in the monks' room and what we'll be doing and who's doing what when. The chores are kind of spelled out, even the two monastics will be helping in the with the dishwashing each day, rotation. So there's a sense of looking at those and a lot of interest. I remember when anything like that was posted, I had a lot of interest. I could grasp my future. It was there in my hands right in front of me. I could know this is when I'm doing this and this is when I'm doing that. And there seemed to be some security in that, some sense of like, ah, this isn't going to change. And it's great. And I like this about the schedule. Oh, Ajahn Chah's so great at what he did. And others, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. Why did he put me there? And what am I going to do at that time? And oh no. And on it goes. You know, there's too many pujas. There's too little pujas. There's group practice. Why do we have to do group practice? And, you know, oh, I love group practice. And, yeah, so it kind of, our preferences start to be shown to us. And that's something to look at and examine and work with in your own minds, because it's not how it's going to be. Your plans for the future or what's actually put on the paper, it's impossible. There's no way it's going to be like that, because you're going to be different than you are right now. And, you know, that's just like sort of the things that we hope or expect or want and plan for. I mean, I'm in the same boat. I kind of love plans, love kind of having something planned out. But I'm always disappointed in one way or another. That's just the natural effect of our predicted future. However, if we incorporate that wisdom and knowledge into our practice, then we're okay with whatever arises. And we're also we have a knowledge that even if we are aware of a preference that we have about how something should be or will be or is supposed to be, that we'll probably feel differently about it when it's actually happening. And with that knowledge, then we'll know, oh, this is something to be careful of, my predicting mind. And that, you know, in doing something like that, Ajahn Kandiko pointed out, like, yeah, you're so excited for your retreat plans and making them and everything. And I have been. But in the end, like, there's something to be careful about that, because in doing that, then there is a bit of a darker side that, oh, well, that actually means that it's more difficult to change. And that when there is change and somebody might have not wanted that change to be there, there's a sense of suffering or dukkha. So inevitably, I guess the point of this is that, you know, get ready for change, because it doesn't matter even if it goes exactly as how it's on the paper. It's our minds that are going to be different and changing all the time. And so this is really helpful for me to reflect on, because I have my tendency or my habit is to want to know, to want to have figured out, to have a predicted future and then feel safe around that. And I see that as quite on a bit, but not very beneficial for myself, but yet it's a habit. And the more that I can try to shift my focus and direction towards understanding and trying to kind of clarify my own confusion, or to be motivated much more around like, oh, when I have an unwholesome state, when I'm feeling angry or frustrated, or I'm feeling sad or whatever it might be, that I see like, oh, that's what I'm really interested here. Not my future, but how do I hold this moment in a skillful way? How do I see clearly into my own suffering. And that's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to kind of carry moment by moment, because we can lose that intention. We can lose the direction that we think is right for us when we're in that particular moment of seeing correctly, of having sort of a right view or an understanding. There was just today, I was talking about this, and Tanhimiko reminded me of something that Metika had said. I think it might be like more than 2 years ago now. Mentika was, she was a woman who was a teacher in Fort Bragg, a Dhamma teacher, and we had gone to teach at her meditation hall for, I think, probably 25 years on and off. And she eventually became ill, and she would come to the monastery when she could, but 2 years ago she became very ill and was dying. I can't remember how old she was. I'm thinking late 70s, early 80s, might have been 81 or 82. I can't remember. Anyway, she was on dialysis, and she started to go off dialysis, and she lasted a bit longer than we thought. I think it was, I might be getting these numbers wrong, but I think it was a total of 6 weeks after that, 3 to 6 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that. So we would go over and see her daily, and we would visit with her as she was dying. And her short-term memory was not there. So she wouldn't always remember who was there day to day. But she was really just kind of, you know, these things that were coming out at the end of her life, just very wonderful stories and just these kind of, she was quite witty and blunt in her teachings. So at one point she just said, you know, most people, they're well-intentioned, but they totally miss the point. And when I heard that, wow, that's great. And I think I said something punchy back, which was, I don't agree with myself, but I said, well, that should be the motto of a Bhaiagiri. And I actually don't think that should be the motto of a Bhaiagiri, because I think that if people are coming here, then they actually do understand to a degree the point of what it is they're doing. They're motivated to be released from suffering. And that is a great understanding of the point. But at the same time, as I'm illustrating and trying to talk about, having good intentions and mostly understanding the point doesn't always get us there. We're still fraught with kind of difficulties that we can have. And so if we go into this retreat with an attitude of wanting to understand, but knowing that this is going to be sometimes a struggle for each one of us, that it's no different from our day-to-day lives. It's no different from when we are with someone and we say something we regret, or we are trying to engage with our formal practice and it's not going well, or we have something that does go well and then we decide like, that's it for me. I've really figured it out. And then we have a week of just very difficult sittings and our mind's unconcentrated and we wonder where it all went. But for the most part, there will be a progression. There will be, a digging deeper and uncovering different layers. And some of those layers are pleasant and some of them are unpleasant and some of them lead to more dukkha if we're not skillful with them. And some of them lead to the dukkha that leads to the end of dukkha. And so all of this is part of the experience. So this week, this pre-retreat week, when there are trainings going on with the retreat crew and we're seeing like kind of getting ready for this different experience that we're going to have in the monastery. Many of the monks here have spent just the same, you know, same thing, years on retreat. And yet each one, from my perspective, has been very different because, as I noted, you know, it just, the experience of the mind is very different each year, each day, really. So it's very helpful for us to kind of think about and reflect about what it is that we're doing, why we're motivated to do this. What's our motivation? Because that's not always clear. You sit down, let's say, and you're meditating, and just maybe you start thinking, okay, now it's time to focus on an object of concentration. So I'll pick the breath, or maybe I'll use metta, or I'll focus on a subha practice. Whatever it might be, we might rush towards that sort of object because that's what we know, that's our habit. And perhaps never ask ourselves, well, why am I doing this? And that's a very important question to ask, because that can get away from us over a long period of time. That can be something that we haven't asked ourselves, and we forget, oh, wow, I guess I'm not actually that clear. Been sort of just watching the breath for the last several years, and that's what I do. I guess it's because I don't want to suffer. And so you want to look at that, because if we are just engaging with our Dhamma practice from a point of view of doing certain activities, and we think that's what Dhamma practice is, then we might be losing a potential that we might have for a deeper understanding. And so that's what it's really about. This is, I emphasized in the last talk, this is really about learning, about understanding. So for example, we might really enjoy practicing the teachings of the Buddha because we feel peaceful. And that's not a bad thing. In fact, if we're in turmoil, then we can't really understand much. But if being peaceful is the motivation rather than learning, or if being peaceful is the motivation rather than reflecting or being released from suffering, our own suffering, then we might not be getting it. We might not be seeing clearly. And so this question of motivation really helps. Why am I doing this? What's this for? And what is my motivation here? What am I trying to get out of this? Is the idea of getting something out of my spiritual practice, is that maybe not the greatest way to think about it? Obviously, we're doing it for a purpose. So in a way, those words make sense, get something out of it. But sometimes the getting out of it is an expectation around me and how I will get something. And that something, if we're not questioning it, might not be the best or most wholesome way or most wholesome direction that we're headed. So, you know, like, yeah, a good example would be like, oh, if I gain clearer and clearer understanding, then I can give good Dhamma talks, right? And that's not a very good motivation for one, why one is engaging in a spiritual practice. Giving a good Dhamma talk is a worldly endeavor. It's a worldly thing. And so it's not always through necessarily having an understanding of Dhamma that one does that. But one can have a knack at it or can be good at it, but that's not really helpful. And I'm very grateful to Lumpur Viradhamma, who early on when I was talking to him about nervousness about giving Dhamma talks, he said, oh, well, just don't worry about anybody understanding you. You know, that's not worry, you know, be concerned about your learning something while you're giving the talk. And I thought, really? Like, don't worry about other people? Like, what if it's terrible? And he just said, yeah, it doesn't matter if it's terrible. Just the focus is on your learning and understanding, which is a bit of a shock. But possibly what that means is that if one is focused in that way, that's a wholesome direction that one is trying to learn and understand. And that will carry forward either in the present or eventually for others who are listening. So as we're going on, you know, because we want to kind of look at what it is like we're motivated about with our practice, because we can be competitive with ourselves, for example, or we can tell ourselves we're no good at what we're doing, or, you know, I wish my mind wasn't such a mess. These are kind of things that we work with in our meditation. You know, so it was a terrible meditation. Why was it a terrible meditation? Because I felt like I couldn't calm my mind down in any way whatsoever. I was just here and there, and but you might ask yourselves, but were you making an effort in that direction? Oh yeah, I was working hard, but it wasn't helping. I was trying to understand what was going on, but that doesn't make it a bad meditation, you know, because people can call something good meditation, but just be completely dulled out. It's, oh yeah, it's so peaceful. What did you learn? Learn? I mean, it's just nice. Okay, but what did that teach you? You know, how did you get there? How did that happen? I don't know. So this is a reflective path. And the more that we reflect and kind of engage our minds with what we're doing, the more that we can uncover that understanding and learn more about what the Buddha's teachings are. We can penetrate the Four Noble Truths. And it's up to us. It's really up to us to kind of bring forth that reflective capacity for ourselves, bring forth a questioning about our motivations, and really to kind of to look like, am I headed in the right direction? Is this the right thing for me. And Islam Porpasana would answer people sometimes when they would be asking him to sort out something for themselves. He would see that they were wanting him to do the work, and he would say, use your wisdom, use your own wisdom. And I think many of us, most of us, if not all of us, do have that wisdom. You know, we have enough wisdom to understand where we are moving in a direction where we are encouraging ourselves towards wholesome states. And we're seeing that in certain ways, we might be moving towards an unwholesome state. You know, like, let's say you have some sort of interaction with somebody and you're like, oh God, I can't believe he sent that. I just want to tell him what an idiot he is. And, you know, and it starts going on in your mind. You say, oh, I shouldn't really be having this conversation, but I still want to tell him, you know. And it goes on, and you're trying to tell yourself, look, this isn't wholesome. But you might still be embracing the unwholesome. And either the effort's not there, or it's just too, there's too much delusion going on. You know, the aversion is too strong. But there's times when we actually can catch ourselves and we choose not to. And that is kind of a sad and, you know, a bit of a shame, but it's something that I think happens fairly often. And we want to try to figure out ways like, okay, how do I learn how to not have that happen when it's obvious I could have actually not said that thing to that person. I didn't have to go there with them. Or I made the mistake and it's more about harmony and that's what I really want to focus on here rather than who's right, who's wrong. So even the post-reflective capacity on understanding what is the best way to rectify this situation. So the point I'm making is that we want to move away from a little bit of sense of laziness towards reflection, or a sense of not wanting to work in that direction. I'd rather just, it's so much easier to just watch the breath and not ask questions. And if the questions are right, you know, if it's not proliferation, if it's not like doubt, the doubt of like, what am I doing? How should I do this? You know, the more of a sense of like how doubt can kind of keep us going in circles and have no answer. That's not reflection. Reflection points us in the right direction where we feel, aha, that's the right way. Whereas doubt as a hindrance comes up as something that is just never going to end as we engage with it. It has no ending. So it's unskillful in that way. So I wrote down the qualities that the Buddha said to the qualities that lead to dispassion, not depassion. So Mahapajapati asked the Buddha, hey, can you please give me a teaching on the Dhamma in brief? And so he said, well, when you have these qualities that lead towards dispassion and not passion, being unfettered and not attached, qualities that lead to shedding and not accumulation, modesty and fewness of desires and not self-aggrandizement and accumulating desires, contentment and not discontent, seclusion and not entanglement or seeking company, persistence and not laziness, unburdensomeness and not being burdened, or being easy to support and not being burdensome. These lead to the Dhamma, and you will know that these are the qualities that lead to the Dhamma and understand them. So, and then he does it in the reverse order for the qualities that don't lead to the Dhamma, that are those opposites. It's a great list to bring up and to really think about, because if you can bring these into mind, you can ask yourselves, well, what am I doing here? You know, am I engaging in qualities that are leading to shedding, or am I engaging in qualities that lead to accumulation and getting more, and also like kind of complication that we're adding to it? Or an easy one is passion and dispassion. It's easy to get some passion going in meditation, even just about a view you have. It really should be this way, and you start feeling really more and more impassioned about that. And it's like, well, I mean, it's just not that important how eggs are served. I mean, there's a lot of different ways, but your way might not be that important. It's just one way. So that we can, I mean, that's how ridiculous it can get. This is how something needs to be done, and I know it. And we just might not see it. We might not be very clear with it in our minds. So that's where we want to try to question ourselves. And if we don't have a reflective capacity, if that's not something we're training ourselves in, then we'll just move towards those unwholesome states, unwholesome objects of mind. And that will be what we grasp, what we're interested in. So these qualities, we want to have a sense of working with them and testing ourselves. You know, why am I speaking to this person about that thing? Is that a quality of Dhamma, or is that a quality that's leading me away from Dhamma? You know, or just anything we're engaging with. And the more that we start to develop this capacity for ourselves, we strengthen it. And it's like kind of like building muscles, you know, sort of the muscle of reflection, rather than kind of sometimes just kind of being told, well, I just should engage with these object of meditation and stop my mind from thinking and be peaceful. So that's a direction we want to kind of move into and just learn and ask ourselves about, because it's so easy to essentially kind of dull ourselves into a sense of disinterest, or as I used before, laziness, or almost aversion, not wanting to do work of asking ourselves, what's the right thing to do here? How can I learn about the right thing to do and what direction I'm moving in? And so as we move through this retreat, we are likely going to engage in, that's something that we can try to work on over and over and over again. We can work on it like kind of a, when you're planing wood or working with wood, you know, you have to kind of, to make something that's very fine and detailed with wood, you have to put a lot of time into it. And sometimes you make mistakes, you got to start over, and you just keep that work up. You don't need to throw anything away or kind of give up on it. It's just that it takes time to work through something. And so ultimately, then that comes to not just being well-intentioned, but really understanding the point. And when you bring yourself to feel confident that you're moving in that direction, then what happens is that the suffering does decrease, and the wisdom around how that happens increases. And that is something that one can feel eventually very not only happy about, but confident in the direction of one's own practice. This is where like insight and understanding arise. And that's true wisdom that is allowing, you know, the suffering that we create in our lives to cease. So I just wanted to offer some words, reflection, and again, very much looking forward to the unknown, and very happy that we have this wonderful group of the laity who are coming in, the retreat crew who are sadhuing us, who are saying like, yes, keep going, do this, we're here to support you. And that hopefully they're also going to gain in both the benefits of Dana, but also being on retreat with us and learning the Dhamma as we go along. And yeah, I wish everyone well in this endeavor. Well.